Welcome in once again to Tony Talk right here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, our weekly visit with Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. I'm Fox 2 Sports Director Martin Kilcoyne. Don't forget our sponsors are Greenville University, Triad Bank, Marie Davila Senior Living, and a new one this week. We welcome aboard Victory Men's Health. And we want to remind everybody, subscribe to the podcast. That's the easiest thing to do. Whether you go to iTunes or Google, just get signed up. And that way the program is delivered to you each week. And you can communicate with this show, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. And Tony, I forgot last week. Every week I say I forgot something really important. And to me, this was really important. You saw a Santana concert when the Sox were down in the Tampa area. Tell me about the show, but also about being friendly with the band. I know they're kind of a Northern California band. When did you get to know them and the relationship, but also a little bit about the show?
Well, they are a Northern California band, and as it turns out, the percussionist, one of the percussionists for Santana, Carl Perazzo, lives in the Oakland area. So for years, we've gotten to know him, and he and Mark Russo, who's a sax player with the Doobies, they're like the musical producers for that Stars to the Rescue show that we do every year in January. So Carl has introduced me to Carlos, you know, and over time, one year he actually did our show, Stars to the Rescue. It was amazing, and, you know, whenever we go to a concert, you have a chance to go backstage, say hello. He's really a gentleman, you know, very interesting guy. So as it turned out, the Red Sox went into on a Thursday. We were off, and they were staying at the same hotel. So that night, walked over to Al Lang Field where the Cardinals used to train. My first two springs for 40 some years, and you know, walked there, listened to it for, you know, to about an hour and a half, and they, you know, they're better than ever. So I get one of the PS I think the fans would enjoy. In 2011, they came in to play at the Fox. And the night before, we took them over to Tony's, Carlos, Carl, and a couple of other band members. And, you know, there was, I forgot who else was in the group with us. You know, we could stay there late. And he had a thing around his neck that he gave to me for good luck. And I ended up wearing it during the playoff and win the World Series. So we shall forever be thankful to Carlos for that bit of good karma.
How about that? Carlos Santana connected to Cardinal history forever. I know you love music and you're friends with a lot of these musicians. Did you ever play an instrument? Were you in the band in high school? Did you play the drums? I'm trying to picture you with an instrument in hand, and I have to be honest, I can't.
Well, the one that's going to really be very difficult to my daughters know about this, because they saw a picture in elementary school. I was in the school band. I played cymbals. And I can still remember the song, you know, like, da da da, and Clash. And then I go to the front of the stage to do that, and then I have to go to the back and you know, quietly bang my cymbals. And that was about it, man.
Oh, I got to get a picture of that. All right, now some baseball talk. Mike Shildt and the Cardinals off to a fast start in 2019. He also had a really good record when he took over in the second half of 2018. I think for a lot of fans, they didn't know much about Mike Shildt, but you'd been around him a bunch because he'd been in the organization. Do you remember when you first met him? And give me an idea about the relationship that you two have.
Well, it started out as a we, because when he came in, and he came in at like an entry level in player development and scouting and so forth, and then he just impressed the folks in player development, and they started doing more and more with him. You know, he's like a coach, and then became a manager at the lower level, rookie ball. He had then, and it continues to have, a very unique way to connect with players. You know, he's got a sense of humor, but he's very honest. Guys really trust him, and he's a good, you know, he's a, you know, you hear it now, but sometimes it's an overused term. He's a very good communicator. By that, it means he listens, and then he communicates. So he doesn't just talk you to, and you can't wait to get away from him. So the other part that I, you know, Martin, I think is important to mention is that, you know, if you ever were around George Kissel, and we've talked about it forever since, you know, during my time there, you had the opportunity to be a student of the game, because George was one of the great teachers of all time. And if you didn't have all the answers, which was the attitude we should all have, you could learn an awful lot about the game. And Mike, from day one, was an avid listener and learner, and I can remember him coming in. And once you see a guy has that kind of conscientious interest in learning the game, then you invite him to, you know, to attend. And so Mike was, you know, we could come into our big league camp and listen in all the meetings when we were in. During that, you'd talk fundamentals, and then he would impress, because when it was over, he'd go be pulled Dave McKay aside. Well, you know, I really didn't want to make sure that I figured out. Now, how'd you teach, you know, going back on a ball or making a turn? And he'd go to Okendo about infield player Patini. He'd ask Duncan, you know, and he'd ask me. So we were all really impressed with how sincere and how quickly he picked it up. And then you saw him actually manage, and he was putting all that knowledge to use. So it's no surprise, if you watch his career, that he's had a positive effect on that major league club.
You know, what kills me is when he got the job, people said, oh, this is the Cardinals. You got to have a big name. I mean, we had La Russa, we had Torrey, we had Whitey. This guy, he doesn't have that big name. And I was thinking, when you got the job in Chicago, you were a nobody. I mean, I'm sure people, there wasn't social media, but they're like, well, who's this guy? It kind of bothers me, because everybody, whether it's Sparky Anderson, Jim Leland, anybody, you're not a name until you've done it for a minute. I don't know what it was like for you when you first got that White Sox job, but I always think that it's not fair to somebody when we say, well, he's just not a big name. Well, everybody had to start somewhere.
That's a good point, Martin, because, you know, I had played a long time. I mean, I played poorly, but I played for 16 years. The last three were as a player coach, including my last one with the Cardinals down AAA at New Orleans. But when I got the White Sox job, because I was a player coach for 2 years in their system before my last one, I don't imagine minor league parts of 2 years, and they gave it a big league job. And I can remember that everybody laughed about it, but Harry Carey, who was not a big fan of mine because he didn't think I had the credentials, would tell everybody the only reason that I was the manager of the White Sox was that Bill Veeck was too cheap to hire a real manager. So a lot of fans thought that made sense, and it probably did, as a matter of fact. But, you know, you have, I think with Mike's case, the thing that we like so much about it, as opposed, if you look at a lot of the name guys who have had legitimate big league careers that are getting chances to manage without a lot of experience, or any experience really, minor league coaching or minor league managing, you know, that's really hard for them, because you have to get experience at actually pulling the trigger as a manager. And that's one thing, you know, Mike worked his way up through the system and was, you know, he was the boss of all those teams as far as making decisions about what the lineup was, you know, when to push offensively and when to handle pitching. So I think Mike really is a throwback in a way, because you didn't used to be able to get a job in the big leagues unless you had enough minor league experience to prove that you could handle it.
Now, did you and Harry ever talk about that, joke about it years later when you were somebody?
No, I was not a big fan of Harry. I thought he was, I thought he had a lot, you know, and believe me, this is hard to say because he's not alive right now, but, you know, he had one side to the fans where he was like their guy, but he was very critical, and he would pick out Lambs, people that were struggling, and then he would just embarrass the hell out of them, and the fans say, hey, tell it like it is. Well, meanwhile, he made a career of that, so I am not a fan of his.
All right, and one day I'll tell you that, when we have more time, I'll tell you the story. He called me a rude young man. That's a whole nother story.
That's a compliment. Congratulations.
We ended up doing the interview anyway after that, but that's a whole nother story for another day. The Cardinals in 2019, 19 wins before May 1st. It's a record for the franchise. It's a little bit skewed because they're now playing games. They're starting the season in late March. But I'm curious, when does a team, manager, GM, front office, sort of look at the team and say, all right, this is a barometer of where we are? Because you can have a great April and then fall apart. And, you know, our buddy Mike Claiborne always says Flag Day to him is the key. June 14th, he said, talk to me around Flag Day and see how we're doing. Is there a date on the calendar where you say, all right, this is our team, and you know what, this is legit, we are good?
Well, I just think that's a really difficult question to answer, only because this is a six-month test. I mean, suppose you had started poorly. You know, when is it that you say you're a poor team? And the fact is, if you started poorly, if you have talent and you go about your business right, you know, the beauty of the long season is you have the cream will come to the top. Whether you're a player who got off to a slow start. I can remember in 2011, if you remember, Karp and Albert both got off to very slow starts, which was very strange. And by the end of the season, they were themselves. Well, the same thing when you start off good. It, you know, it is, you will be tested for the next 5 months. And I think what we always try to do is just be realistic, evaluating what we had. And, you know, I saw, for example, you know, I saw the end of the game yesterday. You know, now you don't have Hicks to close, and out comes Gant. You know, one-run game, and he gets three outs. I mean, you start having that kind of depth in the bullpen, and you've got legitimate starters. To me, you know, one of the most exciting things is that depth in the lineup now, if we can keep those guys healthy. But, you know, now they got Goldie, but you got Osuna producing, you know, and Yayo on a hitting streak. So the deeper the lineup and the deeper the pitching staff, that's the evaluation. And if you have that and you keep them healthy, then, I would be very optimistic that the next 5 months that, the Cardinals are going to be very competitive.
And because October can be so random, I guess you can never say, oh, this team's going to win it all when you're sitting there in July and you're 30 over. In August, you got a 10-game lead. I mean, you still don't. I mean, you might say, hey, we're a playoff team. But you still, I guess you could never, even in 2011, you know, well, we're going to win it all. I mean, I guess nobody's that smart.
You know, anybody pretends to be, you just put an X next to their name and say, you know what, a fool. I mean, because, and we've had, and you know, just personally with the playoff teams, had both sides of the reality. And the reality, this is what I was taught going in, and I didn't want to believe it because if I had the best team, I thought, hey, we're going to win it all. And we had the best record, and we get close, but we wouldn't win it all for whatever reason. The reality is the goal is to get to October. And any team that gets through 6 months and qualifies for October play is very capable of winning a best-of-five or a best-of-seven series. So if you look at our last two championships, you know, the 83 wins in 06, you know, and then we come in there and win it, or 2011, go to the last day as a wild-card team. So if you get to October, and hopefully what you try to do then is around September, if you think you got a shot, if you can find a way to have your team peak and keep competing so you go in with some momentum, that's your best shot. But, you know, we've had 100-win teams that didn't win the World Series, and we've had teams that, you know, in the 90s that did. It's a beautiful challenge, and that's why I loved October so much, because it's so unpredictable and it's so exciting.
All right, the Cardinal Hall of Fame has added a couple of new members. Great tradition with the Red Jackets, part of the opening day ceremony. And we have the Cooperstown Hall of Famers, yourself and Whitey and Ozzie and Lou and Gibby and Bruce Sutter. And they've added to it, of course, with their own Red Jackets for, you know, they're not Cooperstown worthy necessarily, but they're Cardinal legends in their own right. And the fans get to pick. And it's really a great process. And this year it's Izzy and Roland, Scott Roland and Jason Isringhausen. Let's start with Izzy. I feel like you guys had a really fun relationship where he could rib you a little bit, beyond the baseball part of it too. But I always got the sense you two were pretty close.
Well, very close, because, you know, Izzy's got a big heart. I mean, he cares about his teammates. And he just get a little distracted. He reminds me of Edmonds once in a while. You know, they're very big talents, and sometimes they would get distracted. You know, Izzy would want to, you know, maybe fall off a building just to break something so he'd have another scar. You know, he's a little bit crazy. But when it came to playing the game and competing, I mean, he was a dead game competitor, and he had big talent. Had a lot of success as a closer, you know, leading the Cardinals, you know, our franchise in saves. Very, very worthy induction, and, you know, in our, from our area, it's going to be very popular, well deserved. And then you know, Scott Rowland, I just talked to him. You know, that daggum injury in that 0-1 playoffs, where the infielder ran into his shoulder and he had the miseries thereafter. You know, he kept playing, but a healthier Scott Rowland is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I still think he's got a shot. But what he did for us, the defensive play, the clutch hitting, the base running, you know, for a big guy, one of the best athletes I have ever seen. I compare him a lot to Carlton Fisk, you know, really big, strong guys that have great athletic skills. In fact, I love defense, and I said it many, many times. I would love to watch a game where 27 balls were hit to Scott Rowland for all 27 outs, and we would be in for a treat. So, you know, for me, I don't even look at it. It's not Cooperstown; it's St. Louis, and that Hall of Fame is, I think, it's one of the DeWitt's great accomplishments besides all the wins, is that they've really gone out of their way to preserve the history and enhance the history, and. And I can't wait for that August day. Although before we leave, I'll mention one. I got one little hiccup with that thing. Well, I'll mention it now. It turns out that that's the day that's the 30-year anniversary of the 89 World Series championship in Oakland. So, you know, maybe somebody will rent me a private jet so I can do both of them.
We might have some few people out there who could take care of that. It's amazing how the memory works. Like, I can still pick it. It was Alex Cintron, I'm pretty sure, of Arizona.
Cintron, you're right.
Yeah, and you're right. If Scott stays healthy, he's going to Cooperstown because of the combination of power and glove. People might be surprised. You said you talked to him recently. It didn't necessarily end well. Where's the relationship at now with Scott?
No, it's fine now, but, you know, it was a very difficult situation. You know, he got hurt. He had a couple of surgeries. And I think one of the surgeries didn't go well. I really think that we took great care of him. And I was very protective of our training staff and our doctor staff. So Scott was understandably upset that the surgeries, you know, did not produce the result that he hoped. And so our issue came from, you know, I just didn't think that he was didn't realize everything that the organization was doing for him. And I stood up and I told him that, but, you know, with time passing, I always recognized the greatness of him as a player. And I have, you know, huge regrets. Like I do, I mentioned it's like Alan Bennis. I mean, if Alan Bennis did not have a sore arm, Alan Bennis would have been one of the great pitchers in Cardinal history. So I feel the same way about Scott. And maybe he did enough, because he had a really significant career. He might have done enough to get into Cooperstown. So anyway, I talked to him, and he's doing some work in Indiana for the Indiana University baseball, and you know he's got he's talking about his daughter, what a great volleyball player she is, and you know they're doing well.
And maybe one of the shyest superstars we've had in this town. He would talk to me in the clubhouse, but if I wanted to do something on TV, he said, "Martin, I got to tell you, it's that camera, something about it." He said, "I'll talk to you all day right here, but I just don't want to be on that camera." And I think he was sincere. I mean, if ESPN came in town, he would have said the same thing.
No, that's a very good point to make, man. You're having a good day. Because I think the Scott that was, you know, not a self-promoter, was not going to get up there and make a lot of noise and attract attention. If you got him on a one-on-one or a private basis with teammates, he was outgoing and was the life of the party and, you know, wasn't anything reticent about him, but he reminds me a lot of Dave Duncan. You know, Dave, if you ever went to dinner with Dave, Dave's very intelligent, great company, but Dave was not ever, and like Scott, they were never going to make a big show publicly to draw attention to themselves.
All right, we'll come back. Your questions for the Cardinal manager, the Hall of Famer, Tony La Russa. One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, a wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter. People there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand? Talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business, and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, 5-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living, independent living at the Villa Estate, skilled nursing, memory care, they have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com, we suggest you go online and schedule a tour. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community, a great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road
from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution.
And a reminder, everyone, you can get involved each week. It's TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast. That way it's delivered directly to you. iTunes, Google, wherever you get your favorite podcast, get signed up. That's the easiest way to have the weekly segments sent to you. Here's an email from Christopher Mathenia. Podcast is great, guys. Really loving it. I do have a question for Tony. So much is made right now out of pace of play. Is he comfortable with the pace of play in the game? If not, how does he feel about the adjustments that are being made? Any suggestions how he would change it? Thanks so much. He says, keep up the good work, Martin. I mean, I assume he means it's understood that Tony's doing his part. I guess maybe a surprise that I'm doing mine. What do you think about Rob Manfred, some of the suggestions? They're trying some things. Where are you right now with pace of play?
Very aware. You remember when I left the Cardinals, I worked for, almost 3 years for Major League Baseball, and pace of play was one of the subjects. And, you know, when I watch games, even to this day, when there's action, it's entertaining. When the action stops, it's not as entertaining. And that's why I think the game clock, which is used in the minor leagues, if you ever go watch a minor league game, pitcher gets on the mound, he gets the ball back. Several seconds later, he's throwing the ball, hitter. And, you know, so just the fact that the pitcher and the hitter are doing their competition is a great way to increase the pace of play. One of the suggestions, by the way, is that the reliever face more than one hitter, like has to face at least three hitters. And I'm actually in favor, I've tweaked it a little bit, I think he should face at least two hitters. The reason is, the game is getting so scripted now, and managers are being told from upstairs that these are the matchups that you must go to. So when you get in the last three innings of a game, and it's dramatic, it's close, and every time there's a hitter, too often the manager will walk out there and make a pitching change, and that 2 or 3 minutes it's dead time. So I just think we need to get the action going as much as possible. That's why I think on a different pace. It's a little more subtle, but you know, when you devalue strikeouts and say it's okay, strikeouts, there's no action to strikeout. You know, putting the ball in play, that's when guys run to the bases and the infielders or outfielders make plays. So I think pace of game is affected by the fact that there's this, you know, this bias for hitting the ball in the air and trying to hit home runs instead of putting the ball in play, and I think that all affects it.
Tim Martin in Chicago, Cardinal fan out of Chicago, wants to know, in 2011, when did you know you were retiring, and did you tell John Mozeliak, Bill DeWitt, did anybody in the inner circle, who knew what, when? And again, we could probably do a whole show, we might, just on the 2011 season or October of 2011, but remind us the details there, who knew what?
I remember about the middle of the season, you know, it just started, you know, I never had a big issue trying to get play every game like it was the last game of my life, manage the game that way. But it was getting harder and harder. And there are certain things that are involved with managing nowadays that are not that much fun. And I mentioned it to my wife and daughters around the All-Star break. They later told me that they just thought, remember I had shingles there in late April, May. And they thought that, you know, I had a rough first half and it was bothering me. But I always look in the mirror. I was taught that, you know, you got to be honest with yourself. My dad always said, people may get fooled by it, but never fool yourself. So in late August, I did tell Mo and Bill. I said, look, you know, at that time we were getting ready to make our run. I said, you know, so you know, you can start preparing to get somebody else because this is going to be it for me. And then I didn't tell anybody else except a couple of Daves that were very close to me, Dave McKay and Dave Duncan. I told them with about, a week or 10 days to go in the season because they, you know, I wanted them to be able to make their own plans. And at the end, because we did make that, Fantasy Island kind of run to the championship, I think Bill and Mo thought that I would change my mind. My family definitely thought they were surprised. My wife was with me. at the parade and the rally, and when we walked into the training, into the gym to tell the players, she was shocked that I hadn't changed my mind. So that's the answer. I had warned the people I thought I should warn, the rest. I didn't want to do anything, you know, to distract from playing the game.
Were you at peace because of that? I remember seeing you in Philly. I think it was before game one, and everybody said, oh, the Phillies are going to clock the Cardinals. I'm sure you remember it. They were the prohibitive favorites. It's just a five-game series. And I remember there was a workout the night before game one, and I'm not saying you were clowning around or being silly. I think I was putting on makeup and you were making fun of me. And I thought, looking back, I thought, God, you were really not at ease because you'll be mad because you're serious and you're a competitor. But I don't know, was there peace of mind almost knowing that you'd made that decision?
What I felt thinking back was I felt very, very fortunate because as we made the run, I thought, well, at least – you know, we're playing to the end, you know, really serious and good baseball, so I could walk away. But to actually get into the postseason is a gift each and every year, and to get in when you know it's your last one, I felt very fortunate. But most of my, you know, inner warmth and happiness had to do with just getting a chance to manage in the playoffs in October. That, to me, was the biggest turn-on that you could have.
Tony keeps busy with Animal Rescue Foundation. You can always find out more, arflife.org. I was on the website the other day. I want to ask him in future weeks about one of his great events, a Champions event where he had Kurt Warner and Tom Coughlin, Bruce Arians, all in the same panel. And you can fire those questions to us at tonytalkquestions@gmail.com. And again, we welcome aboard Victory Men's Health. Be you again, victorymenshealth.com. Your low testosterone can get treated. It could be affecting fatigue, sex drive, depression, hair loss. It's all related to testosterone level. VictoryMensHealth.com. They have a new location in Town and Country, and the original spot is in O'Fallon, Illinois. Also, Greenville University, greenville.edu for more information, and Triad Bank, which is a St. Louis-based bank. Huge Cardinal fans. They started in 2005. You can find them at triadbanking.com. And the home for many years, our great friend Red Shandings, it's Marie Davila Senior Living. We always do Redbird Roulette, but we talked Izzy, we talked Roland. I'm going to put that off till now. I was going to ask you about John Rodriguez. I'm going to hold that till next week. Tony, a great visit as always, and I look forward to next week's conversation.
Well, I hope the fans enjoyed it, Martin, because I certainly did. So we'll talk next week.